This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Casthaven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
Welcome to another episode of Doom Travelers. This is a very special episode this week for the release of Dragons of Tarkir. This past weekend was the pre-release of Dragons of Tarkir. So I'm sure all of you got to your local game store or had more exciting things to do in the first week in the spring. Joining me today are Dave McCoy and Brendan McNamara, who is our special guest because regular co-host Matt Jones is on his way to Paris this weekend, where he has something called an art show. Or like a gallery, they're doing a thing. I don't understand any of that. So, no, we're all very happy for Matt. This is his first solo show. It's a big thing, and we're excited to have Brendan here. Brendan, say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm glad to take Matt's place.
Yeah, this is if it goes well, then Matt can just stay in Paris.
yeah, that doesn't sound like a bad deal for him.
Yeah, right. He's he loves Europe, but his 60,000-inch TV is back here in the States, so he might be a little sad to be stuck over there. So Brendan is another writer for Hipsters of the Coast. He writes a weekly column called "None Shall Pass Bombs." He's one of our limited experts on the site. Has qualified for the Pro Tour, and is going to help us. Talk about the new limited environment that is upon us. And of course, Dave McCoy is going to also share his insights, having drafted the set now this past weekend. Was that a TDL draft or just a casual get-to-know-the-format draft?
It was a post-release or post-pre-release draft. We all just won enough packs to get an eight-man draft together.
Gotcha. So did you draft the official format, or did you? Yes.
Yeah. Nice. We did Dragons, Fate Reforged.
Is that the order it's in? I think it's. Yeah. Isn't it? Okay.
Yeah. So Fate Reforged is last this time.
Oh wow. Okay.
I feel like they wanted to take an opportunity at the end of this format to go back to do it the old way, where you have the small set last instead of first. Like, let's make a draft. Let's make a three-block structure that ends up doing that.
Yeah, it feels like it's been so long, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, but, I think Scars Block. Did we drop Scars Block in the new order? I think that was the first one.
Scars was, yeah, because you drafted New Phyrexia first.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. As a quick aside, if you ever want to have a really bonkers draft experience, draft triple New Phyrexia. Because every card is playable in every deck. But anyways, and of course, I'm your host, Rich Stein, who has played zero Dragons of Tarkir so far, but that won't stop me from sharing my opinions. So I want to start with first impressions. So Dave, what was your first impression, having seen all the spoilers? And even before you opened your first pack of Dragons of Tarkir, having just seen the spoilers, reviewed it for the set, what was your first impression of what the limited environment was going to be?
It was going to be two colors and dirtily, just based on all the gigantic flyers there are. And, you know, honestly, I pre-released at the 20-sided store on Saturday morning, and it didn't really feel dirtily at all. Maybe because my deck was so weak and I just got destroyed so thoroughly, but it felt like it was a race to the first dragon or the first six or seven drop, and that determined the match. But I mean, I played Ojutai Blue White, and I was behind every game, and rebound doesn't seem very good when you're behind, so I just got thoroughly decimated.
So your first impression that it was going to be a dirty format didn't quite hold up in your experience.
Yeah, I remember our first like 3 weeks of cons felt super dirty because the ground just gummed up and nobody was doing anything. But I had the exact opposite experience at the pre-release, at least, and I just got destroyed by huge flyers.
So Brendan, what was your first impression of the set and the new format?
So looking at it going in, before I had played, like, it's obvious that they want you to be able to play dragons, because it would be a failure if you couldn't play dragons in this format. So you have to be able to get to six mana and play big flyers. But I also know that, like, the biggest criticism that they make, I mean, they being Wizards, makes of Rise of Eldrazi was that it was really bad to play two drops. And so people who didn't know any better and were like, oh, cool, a draft format. I'm going to draft a bunch of two to three drops and play a beatdown deck. And if you did that in Rise, you just lost, which I haven't really drafted Rise that much, so I can't say for certain, but that's what I've heard.
It was what they called a trap at the time.
I figured that this set being like the next set where they want you to play big, expensive creatures, I mean, Theros was kind of like it too, but certainly this set with the dragons, they were going to make it playable to play a beatdown deck. And so when I went into the pre-release, I picked Silumgar because blue-black forever. And I got a bunch of awesome blue-black rares. My foil one was Sidisi, which is incredibly good. And I had this Profaner of the Dead, I think is what it's called. It exploits a creature and you bounce your opponent's team with toughness less than its toughness, which is pretty good sometimes. I mean, sometimes it doesn't do anything, but still a 3/3. But I also had, I had the Pitiless Horde that's like a 3-drop 5/3 that you can dash for 4 mana and it does 2 damage to you each turn. So it's just like incredibly fast, aggressive. And I had that zombie mythic that like 4/3 that comes back from your graveyard. I had a bunch of really good cards. And, you know, I didn't have Ultimate Price or any of the really good straight-up kill spells, but I had a lot of tempo cards. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to build a tempo deck. I've got this crazy 5/3 that I can just play, and then I have those 0/4 blue creatures that you can exploit them to bounce. So they're basically just like a Void Snare that can also be a blocker if you need it. And so I just had a couple of those, and I would play the 5/3 and then bounce their creatures and just kill them. And then I would play Sidisi and tutor up whatever of my bombs I didn't already have. And because I didn't have any dragons in my pool in those colors, I had 3 total in my entire pool. And I had almost no like hard removal. And so I just said, well, I'm going to try to go under people and play quickly and play tempo. And I don't have enough.
And that's definitely something that players didn't have the option to do during Rise of the Eldrazi. Like you said, one of those decks would have just gotten crushed by some of the big Eldrazi creatures. So both of you kind of had an expectation of what was going to happen, and then ended up going having a completely different experience, right, Brendan?
Yeah, what surprised me was I ended up playing 3 rounds at my pre-release, because the one I could go to was a 6-round pre-release that started at 6 p.m. at night and went till 1 a.m. And I kind of didn't feel like playing all of it, but I wanted to play some, and I could just play at it. And so I played 3 rounds. I won my first 2 rounds where I just crushed my opponents. In the second round, one of my opponents had Sarkhan, the new Planeswalker, and I still crushed him. And then the third round, I got absolutely decimated by a black-red dash deck that was basically just all dash creatures and removal.
Wow.
So the only deck I lost to was the one that was faster than mine.
That was even faster and smaller than the one you built. So you guys both kind of expected the format to be dragon-heavy. The two opponents that you played against that you beat, Brendan and Dave, the opponents you guys that you saw, so Dave, were your opponents kind of on that plan of getting to dragons, and then...
Yeah, so my second round is pretty indicative of how my day went It he curved Outpost Siege, which is the red siege that lets you exile the top card and play it until end of turn, into Thunderbreak Regent, which is the red rare dragon that is a 4/4, and it lightning bolts you every time you try and target it, into the new Dromoka, which is like a 5/7 lifelink. You can't play spells on your opponent's turn.
So he had a Naya deck.
Yeah, so that was pretty indicative of my day. It was very much a just a big, impactful creatures destroying me. And I mean, I was a blue-white deck, so maybe that shaped my experience. So like, I didn't have any pacifism, so all I could do was like bounce them or tap them. I couldn't really do a lot to them. So that probably shaped my experience of losing very badly to dragons. And I was also in the OX bracket, so I didn't, you know, face any really good aggressive decks.
Right, so. Right. And so, Brendan, you had a similar experience with your first two opponents, where they were trying to just get right up to dragons?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my first opponent, I don't even know what he was trying to do, because I killed him too quickly.
Oh, man. Humble brags.
I looked at my pool, and my pool wasn't really fast, but I couldn't win a long game.
Right.
So I figured, if I'm going to win, it's because they haven't played their dragon yet, or that they play their dragon, I bounce it and then kill them.
Right.
And that's basically what I did. But I think that's what both of my first two opponents were trying to do. I got to see a little more of the second one, but right. I basically didn't want to find out.
So so Dave, one of your opponents was Naya, but do you feel that the format is leans heavily towards the five dragon color pairs, or do you think there's more room for flexibility?
You know, that's a good question, and I feel like that the biggest factor, at least in a draft, or I guess in Sealed too, is going to be what dragon you open, because the only gold cards in this set are going to be the mythic dragons and the rare dragons and the uncommon dragon cycle. So I think if you open one of those dragons, that's going to force you pretty heavily into the allied pair colors. But I think a lot of these mechanics have enough synergy between them that there's nothing forcing you into the allied colored pairs versus the enemy colored pairs. Like in cons, the strategy was to stay in an enemy colored pair because it left you open to two different wedges, but there's nothing really forcing you to do that in this set as far as I can see. There's enough strong cards in all of the colors that synergize with different strategies that you can play whichever two color combination you want and then splash your big dragon.
So. Right, right. Brendan, you agree with that assessment that you can pretty much play any color combination and just have it driven by where your pool falls?
Yeah, I think they definitely have made each of the 10 like pairs, both the enemy and ally colors, work somehow. And you know, especially once we get to a real sealed format where it's half born or half Fate Reforged and half dragons. You know, in Fate Reforged, they have that cycle of the enemy color. In like commons, like
right,
like Harsh Sustenance and Grim Contest, and so I would imagine that some of that is still there, but I definitely think there is a dash deck, and there's a bolster deck. Those two mechanics look very pushed, and they feel pushed to me. And I think if you're like that would be the reason to play green white would be
right.
You have a bunch of ways to bolster, and you have things that start out as 2/1s and become flyers when they get counters put on them and stuff like that. And I don't think there's as much support for like a blue-green morph deck anymore.
Right. you know, it's funny because I was looking at the Megamorph cards earlier, and of course they span all five colors. But blue and green are dominant in Megamorph, just like blue-green was a little bit dominant in Morph in Khanzatark here. So from that perspective, you know, I think people might be inclined to try to force that kind of a deck. But I think you're right. The mechanics that are linear are definitely going to drive drive that up, and dash decks reward you for having a faster deck, and of course more dash creatures means more fast attacks, and the bolster deck is going to reward you for having the, you know, the components for bolster. Rebound, Rebound and Ferocious, Formidable. Rebound, Formidable, and
Exploit.
Starts with an E.
Exploit. Yeah.
Exploit. Those aren't necessarily linear mechanics, right? In fact, if you have a lot of exploit creatures, it probably starts to become a problem of diminishing returns, because who are you going to sacrifice?
Yeah, I had a lot of exploit creatures in my pool, and like the problem with them is most of them cost too much mana unless you're actually exploiting something. Like I have, there's this 2/3 flyer that costs 3 and a black, and if you exploit, you get a sign in blood, so you draw 2 and lose 2 life. And
right.
I just had a lot of situations where it was like, well, I need a 2/3 flyer, and I'm just going to play it, but like I'm paying 4 and I feel bad about it.
Right,
and
yeah.
Like Sidisi or the rare, the rares I had to exploit, they either bounced their team or tutored a card. I happily exploited with those. But I feel like you don't want that many. Or
right.
you don't need that many. And if you have too many of them, you're going to have a lot of inefficient cards.
It's one of those things that you really want to kind of, if you don't have a trick to combo it with, like Active Treason, You really just don't have a reason to go with it as a linear mechanic. So from that perspective, you could kind of roll black with anything. You're not really stuck with black, blue, or black, red. You can do black, whatever. It's an interesting change from cons drafting, and even from Fate Reforged with cons. Do you think that, Dave, do you think players are going to, especially newer players, are going to be confused or fall into a trap of forcing allied colors when something else is what they should be going with?
You know, so I can only speak from a Spikes perspective from that. I found that I really misunderstand casual and beginning players' perspectives. But from my expert point of view, having gone 0-12 in games yesterday, there doesn't seem to be a lot forcing you, like aside from those gold dragons, there's not a lot forcing you into those
right.
allied color pairs. It's very tempting, of course, especially like Brendan said, like the linear mechanics build very well on top of each other. And so once you get a couple bolster cards, more bolster cards are only better. But the way that our draft ended up is half of us were in enemy colored pairs and half of us were in allied colored pairs, which was very interesting. I started out blue-black, but ended up in a black-white warriors deck, which was the most ridiculous transition I've ever made in a draft. And then there were two blue-red players. There was a black-red dash deck that was Andy Longo's that he just destroyed me with. There was basically a mono-white aggro deck that I also got destroyed by.
Wow.
And I forget what color pair the eighth deck was. But it was interesting to me seeing that we were basically split half and half between allied and enemy colors.
Right.
And the result of that, of course, was, as Brendan said, the enemy color cards, the gold cards, in the third pack in Fate Reforged go really late. There were three harsh sustenances, and I was the only black-white player, and I saw all three, and I tabled two of them. So, I didn't open any of them, and, like, almost all of them tabled. So I think we're going to see that people might just push enemy color pairs in order to get those cards
right.
in pack three.
Right.
That seems viable.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you said the dragons are really the only thing pushing you into an allied color pair, but again, the dragons are only a single mana of each color, so they're perfectly splashable if you have any reasonable kind of fixing, especially out of a green deck, for example. So I think Brendan, do you think it's going to be a challenging format to figure out because of the wide open color combinations?
Yeah, I think there's going to be, I think it's going to have an interesting growth of a format where I would guess that the aggro decks are going to be really good to start off with, because they made them good enough to be viable. And that's always what, if there's a good aggro strategy, it usually does well early.
Right.
And the dash mechanic is really good. And it's really interesting. And if you're playing against someone that just has a bunch of dash creatures that are efficiently costed, like there's this red 5/4 that you can dash for 3 in a red, that's really cheap. You know, that's like better
than Robin. And that's like, kind of like that evolution is kind of like cons drafting, right? When triple con started, the Mardu decks were very popular, and the Abzan aggro decks were also very popular. And almost everyone had written off Sultai as a viable limited strategy. But by as the weeks and months went on, it became clearer and clearer that there was a lot more going on with this draft format.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that you can do. One of the most interesting thing I noticed starting off was I had a reduce in stature in my pool of my deck, and I didn't play it because I just thought, this is not really, I'm trying to be aggressive. This leaves a blocker behind that's going to chump block, and it really doesn't do anything against dash creatures. And then everything I lost to pretty much was a dash creature. And I wonder if things like people have said pacifism is not great because of exploit. I think it might not be great because of dash too.
Right.
And people are wondering, like, why would they reprint pacifism? They don't make removal like that anymore. And it probably is because it's not the strategy of just playing sorcery speed removal on all of your opponent's threats might not work that well. And so I think in order for their control deck to do well, or just a deck that has like 5 dragons in it and wants to survive to the point that they can cast at least 2 of them and win, is they're going to have to figure out what answers work best against what decks. And
right.
And maybe pacifism isn't great.
maybe it's that. So Dave, what do you think about pacifism then? Because I want to talk about cards that are good, better than people think, and cards that may be worse than people think. So
sure.
Let's start with pacifism.
I think pacifism has a very high potential to be good, but is often not very good in this set. You can see gigantic bombs like the dragons that pacifism will be very good against, but some of these dragons also have static abilities that pacifism's not going to stop. Like Dromoka stops you from playing spells on your opponent's turn. And like pacifism's not going to stop that. But at the same time, pacifism's not going to stop the dash creature. It's not going to stop the exploit creature. It's really more of a niche card than it ever used to be, which is surprising because it's so powerful for just 1 and a white. So yeah, it's been very unimpressive so far. I lost to it because, you know, it's still a good removal spell when you need to
right.
get a creature out of the way. But it's not the king of removal spells like it has been in the past.
So were there any cards that were better than you expected them to be?
Void Squall of all cards. It's a 5 mana, so 4 and a blue. It's a sorcery, and it returns a non-land permanent to its owner's hand, and then rebounds on your next upkeep. And that I think was almost universally written off as overcosted and not going to be very good. But what it turns out to be is kind of a time walk if you play it correctly. You bounce a Megamorph, and then they can't play it again the next turn because you're just going to bounce it again. And it just ends up being sort of a pay 5 mana to have your opponent waste their 5 or 6 mana. It was very interesting to see Void Squall overperform. Of course, it's very expensive, and you have to be alive at that point for it to work. But that overperformed
right.
every time I saw it in play.
And Brendan, same question: a card that was more impressive than you expected it to be.
So the card Defeat, it's like 1 in a black, destroy a creature with power 2 or less. I think is a really weird card, and I expected it to be pretty bad, just because it's sort of the same thing as debilitating injury, except you can use debilitating injury on a bigger creature, you know? Or like if you cast debilitating injury on a morph and they flip it up, it at least their morph is smaller.
Right.
And if they flip over a glacial stalker or whatever, some large morph, then it just defeat doesn't do anything because the creature has more than two power.
Right.
And I still think it's not great in, like, it's not going to kill anything really big, but what I did discover is that it's very good both in the dash deck and against the dash deck. Because it's good in the dash deck because it kills things like Ancient Carp, you know, 2/5.
Right, right.
It's just very hard for them to get past.
And helps clear the way.
And one of the ways that I died was my opponent had a Reckless Imp, which this card really impressed me. It's a 2 and a black for a 2/2 flyer that can't block, but it dashes for 1 and a black. So it's really, they can just spend 2 mana and throw this 2/2 at you, and unless you have a blocker that's big enough to swallow it in the air, or you have something like Dowsing Gloom or Defeat.
Right.
You're not going to be able to kill it. And then my
especially early on in the format when, like you said, those aggro decks are going to be very popular.
Yeah, and another card that really impressed me was this Ambuscade Shaman, which is the black uncommon dash enabler that gives creatures +2/+2 when they enter the battlefield. Mm. And so my opponent had 6 mana and he dashes that out. It's a 4/4, and then he dashes out the Reckless Imp, and it becomes a 4/4. And I'm just thinking, that's really hard to answer. But Defeat beats it because they're 2/2s when they enter the battlefield.
Right.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I love Magic is because we have cards named Ambuscade Shaman, which make me look up the word ambuscade and learn that ambuscade means an ambush. Like, I had no idea that word existed, but thanks, Wizards.
Yeah. I think that's an example of slower decks have to figure out what the right answers are. What do you need in turns 2, 3, and 4?
Right.
And I think that Defeat is really good in those turns.
And Brendan, any cards that performed significantly worse than you expected? Or maybe a card that an opponent played that didn't quite go as well as they had hoped?
My opponent played that the green 2/4 for 2 green. It's a 2/4 with vigilance, and it has a formidable ability that it can tap for 3 mana.
Sure.
And so it's kind of a weird value card.
Yeah.
The name of it is. Because
Circle of Elders is what it's called.
Yeah. Yeah, a 2/4 for 2 green is not great, but it's certainly playable.
Right.
And getting 3 extra mana when you have formidable is really sweet. There's a lot of activated abilities that cost a lot of mana. Like there's that other formidable creature, the 2-drop that gets +4/+4 if you spend 5 mana with formidable. Like there's ways to use it that were good. But my opponent had it out and he had exactly 8 power. And he attacked 2 of his creatures and I traded 1 of them off. So then he only had 6 power. And then he went to go use the mana from the Circle of Elders. And I was like, oh, I can't do that anymore. But he had enough other mana that it was like, oh, like I walked him through it. I was like, well, you could play another creature to get back up to 8, and then you get the mana back. And it worked out that he could do what he wanted to do, but it was just awkward.
Do you think formidable is another linear mechanic, or is it a bit of a? It seems like a very difficult mechanic to build around.
Yeah, I think it's going to be better than it looks. Because it looks really bad. You're like, power? You're like, are you kidding me? Like, why am I playing cards that are only good when I already have 8 power on board?
Right.
But the way they've made a lot of these creatures is that most of them are pretty good without the formidable. Like that mythic, the shaman of the old ways or whatnot that taps for, you know, multiple colored mana to make creatures and then has some random 11 mana formidable ability to cast Biorhythm.
Oh, right.
Like, those sorts of things. Some of them just feel really tacked on. But other ones, like, I think it's not going to be that hard to build a deck that wants to get into a ground stall.
Right.
And then you're going to have 8 power, or you're going to be on the cusp of having 8 power. And I would imagine that they chose 8, partly because it's double 4, so it has some synergy.
Yeah, sort of synergy with Ferocious.
With Ferocious. But I think they probably also tested it so that that might be a point where it's really interesting, like, you have to actually monitor it.
Yeah.
And that can be a way just to get an edge on your opponents that they have to constantly be thinking about mm-hmm. how much power you have out. And
right.
a lot of the abilities are just suddenly it's like, oh, now 3 of your creatures have a marginal ability that makes them better. And
right. And of course, and Formidable, of course, is an ability that goes really nicely with Bolster. So, you know, the ability, and especially some of the instant speed Bolster effects. Kind of a interesting creature, the Biorhythm one. If we were to make a list of achievements for Dragons of Tarkir Limited, I feel like winning a game by activating Biorhythm would be a platinum achievement in this format. Would you, Dave? Would you build around that if you opened up Biorhythm Pack 1?
Well, you know, I think Formidable is a very interesting mechanic. I think Ferocious was very underrated when we first saw Khans of Tarkir. And similar to these slower decks, like, it's going to take us time to figure out what the key cards are. I think cards like Summit Prowler and cards like Whirlwind Adept, like, only crept up in people's ratings of Khans of Tarkir commons because it was not immediately apparent that they were so key to Ferocious. But once that became apparent, they became so much better and much higher picks for people. And I think Ferocious as a build around me mechanic is going to take us a similar amount of time to identify which creatures are the key creatures to help us get to Formidable and which Formidable abilities are the ones that we're willing to build around. And Biorhythm is probably going to be one that you're going to want to build around. But the thing is, you're going to have those key common creatures that are going to help you get to 8 power. And that's going to be tough to identify which ones are the most important.
I think so. So we're almost at time. So final thoughts. We're 2 months away from Grand Prix Atlantic City, which will be limited for Dragons of Tarkir and Fate Reforged. If you could pick one bomb to open up in your sealed pool in Atlantic City, Brendan, what is the one card you want more than any other card in this format?
Atarka, I think.
Yeah. Straight up 8/8 really, flying trample.
Yeah, I mean, pacifism is pretty solid against Atarka, but even then, you still got to shoot 5 damage somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Dave, you also hoping to open up Atarka?
I would not say no to Atarka.
Is there anything you'd rather have?
I mean, I would be happy with a monocolor bomb, something like Sidisi. Just so you're not forced into having to splash a color to play something like Atarka. But man, you know, like, winning a GP with Atarka would be awesome. I'm not gonna say no to that.
I think I would be really excited to open an Alesha to get a solid Mardu / dash deck and just blow people out with that.
Cool. Alesha's all right, well, great.
Brendan, thanks a lot for coming on and talking Dragons of Tarkir. And Dave, as always, thanks. And we're not streaming Destiny, so all I have to do is hit this hang-up button.
Hey, Guardians. Thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers podcast. You can find more at doomtravelers.com. Or follow at Doom Travelers on Twitter for show updates and other nonsense. Make sure to subscribe to Hipsters TV on YouTube for videos of our previous episodes. And don't forget that you can find audio-only versions of the Doom Travelers podcast on iTunes. For your host, Rich Stein, and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time. Nothing past William Howard.